My life is unmanageable.
I tell you.
When I came into my first meeting in 1977, there was a speaker at the front of the room, and man, I thought she was a big deal, and I wanted to be a big deal too. And I said, I want to do that. Because I've heard in the room so many times people come into the rooms and they see a speaker and they say, oh, God, I have to do that. Forget it. I'm never going in front of the room. But hot diggity, you know, I really wanted to do that because, you know, I wanted to be a big deal. Came away from a weigh-in pay program. Had lost a lot of weight. I was hot stuff. But now I'm just God's messenger. And I want to be humble and small, and I work on that every day. And God knows that's the truth. So because of 12-step recovery, my life is divinely guided. And I made a little agenda here because I have a way of being all over the place. And it was my crazy all over the place thinking that got me in this mess to begin with. So when I was recruited for this, my first reaction was, oh, shit, you know, I have to... Because I've been in the bad mood since 1952. And when I was asked, what do I talk about? And they said, ESH, experience, strength, and hope. I thought, I'm going to talk about what I was thinking when I came in, what I heard to make me change my mind, and what I'm thinking now. So... in the rooms, we hear about changing our defects to assets. So I have an undead zombie defect that keeps, I think it's dead, and it keeps rising up and tries to eat my brain. So it tried to eat my brain when I knew I was coming up here. So when we renamed the defects, I renamed him Honey Bunny. So I said, Honey Bunny, sit down. Mama's talking now. So he keeps trying to eat my brain. So if I get distracted, you know, Honey Bunny's trying to do his thing. So like I said, I'm Janice. I'm powerless over food. My life is unmanageable. I live in Highlands with Bob and Izzy. I met them both through a personal ad. Bob hates OA. He was my binge buddy. We used to read the supermarket flyer like a romance novel. And now he calls this group, this organization, that AO. And when I correct him, he says, yeah, OA stands for odd adults. So I told him very gently, you know, if somebody's going, it's you, not OA. But, you know, sometimes when Honey Bunny's working in my ear, I don't say it quite so gently. But Izzy loves OA because when I get 4 ounces and there's 5 ounces on the plate, he gets the extra ounce in his doggy dish. So he likes that. So, you know, I'm not going to talk about my food behaviors. I did all the stuff that the literature says that we all do. You know me because you are me, in the hamper, under the bed, in the pillowcase. My mother used to walk into my room and say, I smell popcorn. And I would say, what, you're crazy. Thank God she didn't open my closet and see the Tower of Power in there. That would have really been a disaster. But as soon as I got a car, you know, some people, they get a car, they ride down the shore. I got a car, I went to the supermarket. So that's just who I was. And I guess I can explain my behavior by reading a page from my favorite story in the big book called Our Southern Friend. I'm reading from page 217. Nothing is right. Finances are in bad shape. I must find a way to make some money. The family seems to think of nothing but spending. People annoy me. There I am. I try to read, I try to pray, gloom surrounds me. Why has God left me? I mope around the house, I will not go out, I will not enter into anything. What's the matter? I can't understand. I will not be that way. I'll get drunk. It's a cold-blooded idea. It is premeditated. I fix up a little apartment over the garage with books and drinking water. I'm going to town to get some liquor and food. I shall not drink until I get back to the apartment. Then I shall lock myself in and read. And as I read, I shall take little drinks at long intervals. I shall get myself mellow and stay that way. I get in the car and drive off. Halfway down the driveway, a thought strikes me. I'll be honest anyway. I'll tell my wife what I'm going to do. I back up to the door and go into the house. I call my wife into a room where we can talk privately. I tell her quietly what I intend to do. She says nothing. She does not get excited. She maintains a perfect calm. When I'm through speaking, the whole idea has become absurd. When I read that, I said, there it is, I'm absurd. Because I came into the rooms and I heard people say, oh, no, nobody could see me with a big book. They might think I'm an alcoholic. No, not me. I mean, I would have my head tattooed OA. You know, I love the program. I don't want people to think that. No, I have no qualms about that. But when I read this story, I can relate 100% to the alcoholic mentality, especially way back when I came in the rooms, it was okay to change the words from alcoholic to compulsive overeater and alcohol to food. And when one of the women was reading this story, she changed John Barleycorn into John Candycorn. And I said, there I am. So, but, you know, here it's 1977, and I came into the room backwards. I was thin when I came into the rooms. I had just finished a weigh and pay program, and I had a very successful 18 months, and I was miserable. I'll read what I wrote. I am in an unhappy marriage and a thin body after a long stint in weigh and pay. I changed it to protect the innocent. I'm running the family fast food restaurant that I took over when my father passed. I'm lying, spending compulsively, shoplifting, cheating on my husband, and furious that I'm thin and so unhappy. I left out smoking and drinking. My body has changed, but not my thinking. With a few more pounds to go to goal weight, I have no clue as to how I'm going to get there. My husband and I are both disappointed. I am not the girl he married. He doesn't know who I am, and neither do I. I was 29 years old. So there's been a lot of stuff going on in 37 years. My 5-year-old daughter is almost 43. How did that happen? So I think the thing that I wanted to talk about today, remember, you know, what I was thinking, what happened, and what I'm thinking now. I came into the rooms with this bad mood that I've had since 1952. And I'm thin, and I can't figure out why I'm in such a bad mood. But I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to find the crabby people because I'm crabby. I'm miserable. I can't live with myself. And you people were so damn happy. I couldn't stand you. It was disgusting. So there was something going around back then called the Bob Earl tapes. You know, I'm sitting there. I'm thinking, I don't belong in this room. Something's wrong. So I'm listening to Bob Earl, and he had a sponsee called Marty. And part of the tape, he was talking to his therapist about how he came into the rooms because he wanted to meet women. And the therapist said, well, whatever gets you there. Well, I was staying in the rooms because I was having an affair with some guy that was in the room. And I thought, okay, whatever gets me here, you know, here I am. And then I listened to Bob Earl. And Bob Earl said, he says, all you happy people, he says, that's really nice for you, but it wasn't working for me. He says, he was talking about sponsorship, and he says, you see that guy in the corner who's leaning up against the wall? He doesn't want to do anything. He doesn't want to be there. He doesn't even want to make the coffee. That's the guy I want to sponsor. And I thought, hey, okay, I'm good. I'm home. So, like I said, a lot of stuff. I was constantly looking to hear something from somebody in a bad mood. And the first thing I heard was a woman tell her story about how she gave an expensive camera to her son. And then she found out that her son gave it away. And right away, you know, the pissed off button came on. And then she talked about how she said she thought, well, I gave it to my son. It was his camera then. And it was his to do with what he wanted. And I said, I want that. You know, I think that was the first time I put down the crabby. And I said, hey, there's another way of thinking. There's a different way. Because, you know, when we say if we think and do the same thing all the time, we're going to get the same results. So I dove in head first into the program. I developed a friendship with a wonderful woman. And we went to meetings and good stuff. But I went into divorce and dove heavier into the program. And she got pregnant again and dove heavier into all that family, ha-ha stuff, and I was miserable. But I worked the program, and I listened to what I needed to listen to and told Honey Bunny to shut up. Only that wasn't his name back then. It was still fear, resentment, and anger. A couple of years go by, and I go to an outdoor prayer meeting for my religion, not necessarily my faith, and there she was with her husband. I was in physical recovery. She did not recognize me. I went up to her afterwards, and she still didn't recognize me. I took off my sunglasses, and she said, "Janice," she said, "you look wonderful." And I said, "OA, baby." And she said, "Oh, those people, they're crazy." And I said, and I remember exactly what I said, "Yeah, thank God. I fit right in." Years go by. You know, all these things that I've learned in program. You know, Honey Bunny wants to take over here, so I have to read what I've written. That day I learned about fellowship, and the lesson about fellowship continued because I came into the rooms not knowing anything. I was stinted sometime in my childhood. I didn't, you know, I asked for a baby brother. I got this crappy sister where we didn't get along. You know, only through God and the 12 steps do we speak each other. And I'm telling you, you know, I'm that story, you know, where they tell you what to do if the amends do not go well. The amends did not go well. So, you know, the first thing I learned how to do in the program is to ask for help. I've had 5 major surgeries, and they've all been in this program. And I think it was the second one I asked for help. I had already been through a major surgery in this program, and, you know, I said things like, people said to me, "You need a private duty nurse." And I said, "God is my private duty nurse." That's how I was extremely spiritually strong. And they said, "Oh, no, you don't understand." And I said, "No, you don't understand." And God was my private duty nurse, long story short. But when I was going in for my first hip replacement surgery, I was in horrendous pain, doubled over, and I wanted to use the fellowship to help me. I knew I had to use the fellowship to help me. So I asked for help. And when I was in the hospital, every day the cards, I had a big banner across the top of my bed from someone who was a professional artist in the program, of a woman that started out all bent over, and she, you know, got stronger and stronger and higher and higher. I mean, it was a tremendous banner. It was spectacular. I got 142 get well cards. Aww. And the woman that delivered the cards said to me one day, "Who are you?" I slept with those cards in the bed with me. I kept them for years. And my daughter, you know, I didn't say to her, "Hey, jerk, you know, I want you to call me." And, you know, because of this program, I said to her, "I want you to get out your box of crayons. I don't want you to buy me a card. I want you to get out your box of crayons and make me a get well card." And she made me a huge card of Mr. T. "I pity the fool that doesn't get well fast," you know, that kind of thing. And all the nurses that came in said, "Is that Mr. T?" And I said, "Yes, it is." So instead of complaining about my daughter, I was showing her something wonderful. You know, she was like 30, I don't know, she was an adult, and I'm showing my daughter's coloring book, and I was, you know, happy about it. So then when I had these, my first 2 hip replacement surgeries were in July and October. And that year, all the leaves came down, and they stayed there because I couldn't rake them up. So come April, when everything is blooming, I've got, without exaggeration, I had a lot of trees in my backyard, this many leaves. And I couldn't get rid of them for love nor money. I called people. I told them, "Come on, you know, I'll pay you." You know, I also had 4 dogs at the time, and there was a lot of stuff other than leaves because I couldn't bend over and pick it up. They said, "Yeah, I'm coming," and they never showed up. So through God and the 12 steps and my sponsor, I figured out I'm going to do 3 bags or a half an hour, whichever comes first. And I cleaned up every leaf in that yard. 3 bags or a half an hour, whichever comes first. My daughter was taking care of me at the time, and in the middle of my second surgery, I was taking care of her more than she was taking care of me. So I said, "Okay, I release you with love." I was thoroughly pissed off, and I started praying for her joy and happiness, because that's what the program teaches me to do. And that's when she met the man that she's been married to for over 14 years, gift from God. I love him like a son. But the point that I'm trying to making is my daughter my daughter moved out, and she left her room a tumult up to the ceiling, cigarettes put out on the ceiling. And I'm getting over hip replacement surgery. I clean that up a half an hour or until I get upset. Sometimes I'd walk into that room, turn around, I'm done. cleaned up all of that, hired somebody to paint, strip the wallpaper, redo the floors. You know, it's good. Because of God and the 12 steps, I have a relationship with my daughter today. You know, my partner says to me, why don't you, and I said, because doesn't work. If I do the same thing that I did every time that didn't work, guess what? If I do it again, it's not going to work again. So, you know, I'm a long timer in more ways than one in the program. I believed in OA a long time before I surrendered to it. And I went to God on my knees, lower than on my knees, with my face on the floor. I struggled a long time with self-will, and I resisted a long time before I developed a higher power that works for me. So why did I come back? There I was in relapse. You know, I've been, let me confirm, I've been 85 pounds bigger than this and 50 pounds smaller. So I used to make an excuse for myself and say that I am a work in progress. Well, honey, whether I weigh 300 pounds or 140, I'm a work in progress, because honey bunny is whispering in my ear constantly. He wants me to sit down right now, but until the timer says I'm sitting down, I'm not sitting down. Mama's talking, shut up. So while I had my hand in the bag and my head up my ass, I felt I always worked with a sponsor. I always did my writings. I did everything but come to the rooms. And I told the woman that I was working with, I said, I feel a sadness outside of myself. And I knew that it was a power greater than me who was so sad because, you know, I didn't understand what it meant that God wanted me to be happy, joyous, and free. It's taken me 30 years to figure that out. But I knew that God wanted me to be abstinent, and I knew I couldn't do it without all of you. So I came back into the rooms. And it's been different since June 24th of 2008, my mother's birthday. You know, that was my New Year's resolution. You see when it happened, June 24th? You know, my first abstinence anniversary, February 2nd. I shot for January 1st, you know, and then the next horrendous relapse, I shot for January 1st, June 24th, my abstinence anniversary. So, you know, that's who I am. I survived all that and more, you know, and stuff still happens. Cancer scare, this scare, that scare, dog dies. But if I do not repeatedly surrender my will, I'm just going to go back to the old way of thinking. So why do I stay? Well, first of all, wonderful things are happening in the rooms, and I don't want to miss it. You know, I had a sponsor that, when I took a new sponsor in 2008, she demanded service. She would just sign me up for stuff and tell me that she signed me up. And guess what? You're going there. You're going to Edison on Sunday night and celebrate your two-year anniversary. And I have all the coins I have, literature with inscriptions in it, congratulations this, and cards and bells and whistles and anything. Nothing helped me. Although I celebrated all those things and went to all those meetings, nothing helps me more than my connection with God in the 12 steps. The other day I was driving home from the supermarket, and I stopped at a light, and there was a tree with hundreds and hundreds of perfect yellow leaves edged in red. Were I not in recovery, I would have missed that. I'm on my way to intergroup last night, love intergroup, and there's this guy on a bicycle. It's dark. I can hardly see him. Now, the old Janice would said, stupid ass, bicycle. But the higher power Janice says, oh boy, that poor guy, he needs to ride a bicycle wherever he's going. I'm praying that God keeps him safe. So I can't, and did I hear a bell or a whistle? And is my time up yet?
No. Keep talking.
Okay, keep talking. Okay, so I she told me to keep talking. We could be here a long time. A lot happens. I'm 66 years old. So I can't qualify without telling a God story. I've had four hip replacement surgeries, and with the last one, it was like, you know, the best part was the worst part. I knew what to expect. Again, I asked for help, you know, it was wonderful. But I said to God, please. I need to see you stand. I need to see you at the foot of my bed when I open my eyes. And I said to my grandmother, please, Grandma, comfort me, because she was my love, my mentor, my pillow, my, you know, everything. She never said a harsh word to me. She's, you know, God doesn't care what I call him. Sometimes I call him Esther or Grandma because my connection is still so strong with her. So, and I said to my partner and my son-in-law, please don't come. I'm a horrible bitch, you know, when I first come out of surgery. I'm groggy. I don't know where I am. I don't know which end is up. But I asked God to come, and I asked my grandmother to come. So I opened my eyes in the room. There's my partner and my son-in-law. And my son-in-law says, now, my life is divinely guided. These men are in my life because of God and the 12 steps. And I'll tell that story when I have more time. It's an interesting, it's a fun story. So I knew that God had come. You know, my son-in-law said to me, Mom, I'm so sorry. You told me not to come. I had to come. And I knew that God sent them because I said specifically to God, if you can't be there, please send somebody and let me know that it's you. Now my partner doesn't do anything he doesn't want to do. And he sat. It was 4 o'clock in the afternoon. My surgery was in the morning, and he had been there all day waiting for me to come out of surgery. And there he was, standing at the foot of the bed. I thought he was going to McDonald's. You know, I was kind of hoping he'd go to McDonald's because he always says something, you know, let Ronald McDonald take care of it. I don't want to deal with it. So there they were. Now, I was in a teaching hospital, and you deal a lot with interns and teaching people. So I didn't know the first doctor that came in to see me. She walked in, nice, lovely young lady, whose name was Esther, my grandmother's name. So I said to her, Dr. Esther, I know God sent you. She thought I was wacko before that. I said, thank you, God. Thank you so much for coming to see me today. And God is like, I said, thank you, God. So I don't want to miss any of this. Would I have noticed that the doctor's name was Esther? Would I have asked God to come? Would I have yelled at my son-in-law and said, what'd you come for? I told you not to come. You know, and I would have said to my partner, did you feed the dog before you came? You know, what are you doing here? So all these things, everything I have in my life, everything I am, my partner, my dog, my home, my life, my joy and happiness is all related to this room, these rooms, and because I'm a crabby bitch and I couldn't stand myself anymore. You know, that which I thought was comforting me became the problem. You know, I'd be sitting there going like this, and the biggest and worst pain in my life was when I woke up one day and said, this ain't working. This ain't working. And I want to thank you all for keeping the home fires burning until I pulled my head out of my butt and came back in 2008. So I want to end with what I got. I always get the grapevine every morning. And I relate 100% to the alcoholic mentality. The only reason I don't drink is because I like a milkshake better. But I got two grapevines this morning because God wanted to make sure that I read it. The first one said, I have nothing and I am nothing without my God connection. I knew that already. Thank you, God. Thank you for the reminder. But I'm going to read the second one. And by the way, this was written from someone in Bricktown, New Jersey in January 1977. And he says, more than a million of us who suffer from the disease of alcoholism have found not just the ability to live with or survive this insidious disease, but a joyful way of life, as new as the morning and as old as mankind. We can gain sobriety, aspire to serenity, at no greater price than sharing for our fellow sufferers and sharing with them what has been freely given to us. We can experience the true joy of love that we once tried to destroy by not giving it away. And we can learn the truth that the more we give away, the more we will have. I hope I gave it away today. And, you know, I would like to invite you, if I've said anything that upset you, please call me and let's talk about it, because I want that guy in the corner that doesn't want to make the coffee. So if you're a crabby bitch like me, take my number. I like those folks. Hey! Thank you for letting me share.
Well, we never did.